The Illinois Appellate Court, 3rd Division, is now in session. The Honorable Justice Jesse G. Reyes is presiding.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Morning, Your
Honor. Please have a seat.
Counsel for Jewish Elderly v. the State of Frank Kurtz.
And both counsels step up. Could you both sides step up?
Low.
Yeah, no, it shows this way.
I'm sorry, I can hardly see you all.
Can you identify yourselves for the record, please?
Yes.
How do you represent?
Sure, Your Honor. Leon Zelikowski representing the appellants.
I'm sorry, what was the name again?
Zelikowski. That's spelled Z-E-L-E-C-H-O-W.
Okay.
S-K-I.
Great. Thanks.
Meredith Duncan for Lieberman Center, Counsel
okay.
for Jewish Elderly.
All right. So 15 minutes apiece, time for rebuttal. How much time do you want for rebuttal?
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Justice,
please.
Yes.
Oh,
sure.
The last people who were here
are
the tall
ones.
So
yes.
We couldn't see you guys.
Yes.
You had to lift it up.
Yes.
Well, all right.
Next time I wear platform shoes, you'll some for you.
All right. So for the court, can you give us a little bit of a factual background on this case?
Absolutely. In a way, the record is complicated, but in the way is also simple. This is a situation where Frank Kurtz, who was a patient in Lieberman, it's a nursing home, and he developed a disease and then he eventually passed away. And he went into the Lieberman in September 2013 and stayed there until June 23, 2018. The issue in this case is really the Lieberman's claim that he should have received payments from Frank's estate and his widow, who's sitting there, for the care that they, for the nursing care they provided to Frank, and for which they did not receive payment from Medicaid.
Okay, so they didn't receive payment from Medicaid, because originally they were paying, right, when he was patient?
Yes. What happened was there are various situations concerning that. If I could just give you a quick recap. When the first Frank came into the nursing home from September 2023 till November 30, 2023, the care was paid for by Blue Shield Blue Cross.
Okay.
Then from December 1, 2013 to March 31st of 2014, Medicare and Mutual of Omaha. And then April 1st, 2014, October 31st, 2014, the Kurtzes paid personally $67,158. And then we're at the crux of the case. From November 1, 2014 to June 23, 2018, that's the period for which Medicaid should have paid.
Okay, and what was that period again? What was that period?
Sure, November 1, 2014 and June 23, 2018.
And did Medicaid cut a check to Lieberman at any time during that period?
Not during the period, almost 4 years later.
For that period?
For partial payment for that period. And the reason they paid only partially is because the application for the Medicaid payment was submitted late by Lieberman.
And so Medicaid is calling it a partial payment?
Yes. Well, right call it a payment.
Calling it a partial payment.
Yes.
From
Lieberman's standpoint, it's a partial payment. From our standpoint, that should have been the payment in full, because when you apply for a payment for Medicaid and you receive the payment for the relevant period, that payment is in full, and you cannot go to the patient and say, pay me the rest.
And then with Medicaid, though, I'm sorry. Is Medicaid saying that that's all they were going to pay for that period? And from their perspective, that's the full payment for that period?
Yes, because there is no such thing as balance billing, and that's the feature of Medicaid law. It's basically a trade-off. If you are a permanent provider, you provide services to a Medicaid patient, you have an agreement with the state. The state will pay you at the state rate, the Medicaid rate. In return, you don't have to pursue the private patient.
Well, you can't pursue the private patient.
You cannot, because that defeats the whole purpose of the Medicaid law. And that's the problem with this case, is that the trial judge looked at this case as if it were a commercial insurance. Basically, it's saying if there's a shortfall in what insurance pay, you, the patient, are responsible for the shortfall.
Did anyone raise the Lewis case with the trial judge, which seems to be the proposition you're citing about the balance billing?
Yes, we've cited that from day one. Also, if I may go back to the history of the case. So far as the trial, at the trial level, I came into the picture in March of 2022, after the motion for summary judgment was granted. And for the most of that time, and that is from the time the lawsuit was filed in September of 2016, the widow handled the case per se.
So did you handle the motion to reconsider after the motion for summary judgment was granted?
No, I did not.
You did not?
I did not. I came in after the motion for reconsideration was already denied.
Denied, okay.
And the motion to reconsider was denied.
And denied.
Okay.
So I have a question. You mentioned earlier that the payment was late from Medicaid because the submission was late. Now, whose responsibility is that to make that submission?
Lieberman holds itself up as a matter of fact, it's in the name that they are Medicaid specialists. And they did make this, they did finally submit the application, but they did not submit the application until April of 2017. And because Frank was qualified as a Medicaid patient in 2014, they should have submitted the application in the early part of 2015. Now, what that would allow them to do is get in the queue, so to speak. They would just get a spot, get a reservation, and then when the final issues were resolved concerning the spend down and the penalty, then the Medicaid would have paid them for all the days that they were covered under the Medicaid law.
Now, I know that this was before you came on, but it appears that your client attempted to bring DHS into the case early on in the proceedings, but what happened there? Do you know?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I says, okay, so your client early on tried to get the Department of Health and Services involved in the case, but the record doesn't seem to indicate what happened there. What happened?
Your Honor, whatever happened was that whatever issues were resolved, the penalty was eliminated.
Okay.
Judge Hall ruled that the penalty, the $27,000 penalty that the department imposed was unreasonable, and then vacated that penalty.
Okay.
I'm sorry, because I think, and maybe I misunderstood the question, but your client attempted to get the Department of Human Services and HFS in, and I thought the court disallowed it. We just want to know why the court wouldn't have allowed them to be brought in as a...
I can't answer that.
Okay.
The claim was brought by Lieberman against the Franks. Now, from day one, the defendant argued that this was a Medicaid case, and as a matter of fact, she filed a motion to have the Medicaid contract between Lieberman and the state of Illinois attached to the pleading so that the court could actually consider the matter.
So do you view this as a question of fact or a question of law, whether Frank's stay was covered by Medicaid?
There is only one legal issue, and that legal issue is about balance billing. Meaning, if...
Well, you're going to, if I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think you're going to the trial itself. I may be wrong about where Justice Van Tine was going, but...
I thought you were going to the summary judgment.
Was there a material issue of fact?
Absolutely.
That's what we wanted to...
Absolutely.
Talk to
okay. What was that material issue if everybody's in agreement that all of these things were done or it transpired in a way?
Yes, the material issue of fact was whether Medicaid, this was a Medicaid contract or Medicaid claim. Second,
whether it was a claim, Medicaid claim.
So, I'm sorry?
So is that a question of law?
Well,
coverage. Is that a question of
law? The coverage is a factual issue. And plaintiff...
Why is it not like a duck action, you know, where we're just trying to figure out coverage?
I understand, Your Honor, he's asking. Plaintiff took the position, and the trial court accepted, that Medicaid had nothing to do with this case. So the court, I mean, quoted extensively from the trial court statements from the bench that this is private, this is not private insurance.
It is or it's not private insurance?
That's
the court said it is.
So you're saying that the trial judge was wrong?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because the case law is very clear. The Midwest Emergency Associates versus Harmony, and we cited that case extensively in a brief, which says that once you tender a payment, once you treat a Medicaid patient, and you submit a bill to Medicaid, and Medicaid pays you X dollars, you cannot go back to the patient and say, pay me the rest. You, by agreeing to accept medical payments from the state, you agree in advance that that payment will be payment in full. That's the opposition is, so far as this is the controlling law in this case. My concerning, if I may, concerning the issues of fact, we argue in the motion for summary judgment and in the motion for reconsideration that the question was whether Lieberman filed timely the application to get in the queue for Medicaid benefits.
Whether they filed timely or not, what does that have to do with whether Frank was eligible for coverage?
Frank was eligible for coverage the moment he applied for coverage, and there were just two conditions for him getting benefits. And the first was the spend down, that he had to spend in terms of his assets. He had to basically impoverish himself, to spend the money for medical care. And then there was a penalty. And once those two elements were met, then the Medicaid would pay. What the application that what we are saying they should have filed, they would have filed in January of 2015, they would have gotten a spot in the line and they would get paid. The reason they got only paid $44,000. They billed Medicaid $154,000, but they got paid $44,000 because Medicaid took the position that the application was late.
But they ultimately did receive the payment, though, for Medicaid.
For $44,000.
Even though they billed $154,000.
And they were asking Medicaid to pay $154,000.
And if I'm correct, then your position is that Frank, or your client, I should say, satisfied whatever Medicaid spend down requirements were needed.
Correct.
Okay.
And let me just simplify because.
Because, and it's your position, what he just said, because they owe nothing because Medicaid paid.
Correct.
Okay.
Medicaid paid
the $47,000, even though Lieberman was out the balance between $157,000 and the $40-something, your client is not eligible for it because Medicaid had already written this check, partially covering
it. There are two components to plaintiff's claim. There is the component for which they bill Medicaid, the $154,000, and they got paid only $44,000. They are saying we are responsible for the shortfall at their private rate pay, which is about $345 to $365 a day. The Medicaid rate is $156 to $178. So almost double the daily rate.
Now, is Medicaid saying that the reason that there was a discrepancy in what they paid in terms of what Lieberman wanted was because of the late submission?
Yes.
Okay.
And we have, as part of the record, we have an email from
a female.
Did you read it?
Yeah, we read.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that
I
email.
Her name.
Yes.
Basically, because I think we're just from just this discussion, Frank went in, his wife paid what she had to pay. She applied in 2014 for Medicaid.
Yes.
And within 3 months after that, Lieberman should have applied. And what do they call it? An admit pack.
Yes.
And then Mrs. Kurtz, I think is the last name, fought them about this $200-something thousand
spend down
and the $100,000 so penalty and whatever it was. She ultimately won everywhere. She
right.
won the spend down and she won the penalty down to zero, and Lieberman was informed of that.
Yes.
And they never had put the admit pack in early. They didn't put it in until 2017.
Correct.
And then in 2017.
Yeah, but let me just follow up with this, because we have a situation where plaintiff files a motion for summary judgment. They tell Judge Warnick that spend down has not been met, that there is a penalty, and that if they file a claim with Medicaid, there will be criminal consequences. Then, in December of 2021, after the motion was granted for summary judgment, December of 21, Mr. Kelly communicates with the department and basically says, well, the penalty has been lifted, so maybe Mrs. Kurtz is right. Entitled to the benefits. However, on January 4th, there is a hearing on a motion for reconsideration.
Yeah, I don't understand. I'm wondering what the judge said when he got the information that they had.
The judge was not told that.
He wasn't told that?
He didn't know about the Medicaid coverage at the time he ruled on the motion?
He did not know that the Medicaid, well, basically, that the obstacles to the payment were kind of lifted. Plaintiff's counsel failed to disclose to the judge on January 4th that the obstacles to getting payment for Medicaid were removed.
I.e. coverage.
Okay. I'm sorry?
That is coverage.
That the coverage is available. So basically the judge did not hear it.
Yeah, I just it's hard for me to believe that nobody told the judge. I know that your client was pro se, and I probably shouldn't say this, but she did a pretty darn good job.
But she did not know that.
Okay, so then maybe I'm misreading something, but I thought I read that it was disclosed prior to the motion for summary judgment.
It was not.
But Lieberman knew about it.
Correct.
Because they had gotten the notice.
Yes.
All right. I'm good. You shaking your head? No, but don't do that. Because I'm going to look at the record and see who's telling the truth here.
Because this was communication between Lieberman and the state agency. And we were not in the email chain.
All right, so I have a question. I'm going to ask the same question of Lieberman, but it appears in the record that the trial regarding the damages incorporated the entire time when your client's husband was in the facility. If they got paid in part, why was it running from the beginning to the end in terms of the damages?
Because of damages. The judge felt that the jury would be confused with all the testimony about the different payors. So the judge felt that the way to get to a result, we just take the number of days that he was there, multiply it times the private rate.
Even though he wasn't entitled to the private rate the whole time.
And then deduct the actual payments that were made. So as a consequence, we have a situation where plaintiff is violating the balance billing because is getting the shortfall in the Medicare payments and is getting compensated for the period that they would have received payment had they submitted timely their application.
Okay.
It's worth telling is that, I'm approaching my time limit, but it's worth telling is that between December of 2021 and May of 2022, there was no payments made by my clients to address any spend down issues, and there were no further legal proceedings involving the penalty. So, all of a sudden, we find out on the eve of trial that Medicare paid $44,000. And I raised that issue with the trial court at the pretrial conference on July 7th. I said, that puts a different spin on the whole picture because now we had a representation made to the court that that Lieberman could not file it, and there would be penalties and consequences, and that Lieberman would not get paid. And then we have a payment claim, and I ask that the case be reopened to allow me discovery to find out about all the relevant facts. The court denied it, and we went to a abbreviated trial, which is the number of days times the private pay minus the payments that are made.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, the only thing I would say, call the Honor's attention to the 42 CFR paragraph 447.15.
So what was that again? Which one?
Sure. 42 CFR paragraph 447.15, which imposes as the case law says, a bright line rule. When a provider accepts Medicaid payments for services, this prevents the provider from billing anyone for the difference between their customary charges and the amounts paid. You basically, you elected to deal with Medicaid, you're going to get paid on Medicaid, but you've got to accept the payment, this payment in full for that.
Okay, thank you. And you have time for rebuttal. So.
Yes, 10 minutes.
Counsel? Now, we let counsel go over a little bit, so we'll extend the same courtesy to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
May it please court? Thank you. If I may, I'd like to pick up on your Justice's question about a brief factual summary. So I'd like to clarify a little bit about the chronology here and to sort of add to what has been a very long, complicated process. Medicaid is a very confusing process. So, yes, Mr. Kurtz admitted to Lieberman in 2013. Mrs. Kurtz applied December 2014 for Medicaid. There were two denials, 2015-2016, all of which she had appealed timely and proceeded with the Department of Health Care and Family Services to resolve that issue. In 2017, we received our first nursing home supportive living facility calculation. This appears in the record many places. This document is what is used to determine, okay, what is the determination by Medicaid to determine when you have met the resource limit, right? Medicaid is for low income.
I just want to stop you for one.
Yes.
When she applied for Medicaid in December of 2014,
yes.
Was Lieberman notified?
Lieberman knew that she was applying. We actually helped her through the appeals, providing documentation and information to help sort through the denials and all of those things. So we were aware. And when you apply for Medicaid, so there's two kinds of Medicaid. There's long-term care Medicaid, and then there's community benefits Medicaid, hospitals, doctor's visits, pediatricians. So there's two different versions. When you apply for nursing home benefits, you have to identify the facility where you're living. So all of that is sort of part and parcel. So the
argument was she applying for?
Long-term care nursing home.
Okay.
And that is why we get this nursing home calculation.
Yeah, that's why I want to start
yeah.
back. She applies in December of 2014.
Correct.
Lieberman is aware of that.
Absolutely.
Isn't Lieberman supposed to do their admit pack at that time?
So it's complicated in that because there were denials, she wasn't in the system. And so to apply the admit pack, DHS knows that they're admitted, but in order to apply to do the admit pack to say this person is admitted in my facility, we need that Medicaid number. And so there has never been any testimony in this case by DHS.
You're not answering my question. I said, was Lieberman supposed to apply
no.
the admit pack?
No. No. So then this nursing facility calculation on 2017 comes in, and that is when we have a $2,266,000 spend down in a penalty period. Again, timely appealed. Mrs. Kurtz does not believe that this is an appropriate calculation of her income and assets. And though it says that Mr. Kurtz is eligible, there needs to be the spend down, then the penalty, before the floodgates open and Medicaid benefits are available. As you know, that appeal carries on until 2021. All the while, Lieberman has received no payment for their care. This case begins.
They received something from Mrs.
They did. They received Lieberman. Partial payment, $6,200, some Part B Medicaid payments for therapies and things like that.
And some from another payer.
Medicare paid their 100 days. There was Medicare Part B for a couple ancillary therapies. Omaha Mutual is in the record, and so is Blue Cross Blue Shield. Those payments
were
received
at the beginning, right?
Exactly. And okay. Those all cover periods of time. They're sort of scattered throughout. The therapies are scattered throughout. The Medicare is all predating the Medicaid application because Medicare is a payer
but
of first resort.
From your position, you're not paid as of when? What year are you not getting paid?
2014. Correct. And so then those appeals of the 2017 Medicaid decision proceed. In 2021, DHS dismisses its penalty period case, as Your Honor correctly noted. When they did that, they recalculated the benefits. Lieberman became aware of the dismissal. We were not a party to that case. Because a dismissal order was attached in the briefs to the motion to reconsider. That's how we knew it. We knew that this case suddenly disappeared. We then reached out, asked for more information. In January 26, 2022.
So they wouldn't have notified you? I mean,
so DHS does not notify.
The appellant is making the submission. But when they make the submission, in order for you to be able to keep track of what's going on, wouldn't they have notified you as well?
So, for better or for worse, this complicated case that went on for 10 years, Mr. Kurtz had been passed away 3 years. So he's no longer in our facility. So all of the notices got sent to Mrs. Kurtz.
And
we are no longer part of the...
When did he
discharge? 2018. Well, he discharged from our facility June 23rd, 2018. Subsequently passed after that. So he has been out of our facility now for 4 years. So we are not getting notices in due course. There is no evidence or testimony in the record about any procedure that DHS has when someone passes and there's appeals and that sort of thing. We
so
didn't
I
know.
Have, yeah, I still have another question. When the motion to reconsider is filed, you do have these documents now.
So we know that the case was dismissed. The new nursing home calculation was not issued until January 26, 2022, after the motion to reconsider. So we don't know, though we know the penalty period was removed, we didn't know that they recalculated the spend down. Now, getting to the spend down.
By they, who are you referred to recalculate?
Medicaid.
Medicaid.
And Medicaid, by removing the penalty, reassessing the income, looking at all of those medical receipts that Mr. Zelikowski talked about, they made the calculation that there was $408,637 available to apply towards the cost of the care at the facility you are living. So that means effective December 2014, you have to start paying $408,000 to Lieberman until that gets exhausted, until you spend it down. We go into the system. According to the Medicaid system, they calculate that that was effective April 2017. We submit claims, and we receive $42,000 for the period, the dates of service, from April 2017 till his discharge in December 2018. In the record, the testimony during the trial is no payment is owed for April 2017 to June 2018. So the balance billing issue was not an issue. Lieberman accepted full and final payment, albeit there was a copay assigned to the Kurtz family during that period. But during the course of the trial, the jury was instructed, or they heard evidence that from the CFO, that Lieberman is not to pursue payment from April 2017 to 2018. No payment is owed for that period. That was the testimony.
What about the confusion aspect that counsel mentioned that Judge Warnick didn't want for the jury?
Our perspective is, based on this $408,000 spend down that began December 2014 and continued until Medicaid determined it was in MET status as of April 2017, they were required to pay the facility. We received no payment for that determination. That is a private payment on the calculation at $10,500 a month. And that is where we presented evidence and testimony that for his admission, absent the amount that we asked the jury to deduct for all the payments that were received, we are entitled to payment under a theory of quantum merit, unjust enrichment, because we had to dismiss the contract action because there was a dispute about whether there was capacity to execute the contract for the services that were received over the course of 5 years. So it's actually a very simple calculation. From that period of time, there's a private pay rate, and jury, what do you think are the valuable, what is the value of those services? And they heard testimony about the different rates. They heard testimony about the fact that there's 438 days for which payment is not being requested, and they came to a judgment.
Yes. Because we're going on and on about the trial. I want to go back to the motion for summary.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so tell me what happened at the motion for summary judgment. What was the basis of the judge's ruling that there was no material question of fact to be resolved by the jury? What was the issue, and what did the judge decide? Because I'm confused as to why there was a grant of summary judgment in the first place.
Absolutely. And so, as you can tell from the record, there has always been a claim by the defendant appellant that Medicaid should pay. Medicaid should pay for everything, that all of the determinations were wrong, they met the income limits, and they should be, oh, nothing. Throughout the course of the discovery, from the time this case was instituted in 2016 to 2021, multiple forms of discovery, depositions of Department of Health Care and Family Services. And at no time, and the transcript of the motion to reconsider is the most telling, was there ever any evidence, any testimony, any document that would show that some of these arguments are supported and that there is evidence to establish them?
For example, then I just want to stop you because...
Yeah.
And it is a long and complicated record.
Absolutely.
But I thought attached to one of your pleadings, there was testimony from two different people from DHS. And in that testimony, DHS or the other entity indicated that the spend down and the penalty had been resolved. I thought that was in your documents that you presented. And so that's exactly the opposite of what you are saying. So how could the judge make that determination as to who was telling the truth when that's a question for the trier of fact?
And thank you for asking that question. Because how Medicaid determines someone is in MET status for their spend down is they calculate the income.
Now, I heard that, but I said
they do it by time.
Your material.
Right.
That you gave to the judge to review. Is that in the material that you gave to the judge to review?
No. We have never represented that they paid their spend down.
No, in no attachments. Did you get, there was nothing in your attachments from anyone saying that there had been a disposition that they had made their spend down and that I think that the penalty had gone to zero. Okay.
So the department does not verify whether an individual pays their spend down. The documents and the testimony is clear that they leave that to the provider to go out and get, which is what I'm hearing. And so what they do is they calculate the time and determine when, and it's in the deposition of Mr. Haynes, it's a theoretical calculation as to when MET status will be achieved. In this case, based on the final determination, MET status was April 2017. And so we never received that spend down. DHS says, well, then you go figure it out. And that's why we're here. So those payments were not made. So the terminology is confusing because there were determinations during all of the administrative litigation and things where an administrative law judge said, well, it appears that you will have been in MET status. And that was taken by the appellants, and agreeably, it's confusing communication that they were in MET status. Well, what that means is that's based on the assumption that the payments that were directed in these documents were being made to the facility. But they weren't. And so the question that we wanted to ask the jury, the trial court, is what are we owed for that period of time for which this money that Medicaid said you are not eligible for the benefit floodgates to be opened during that time before the floodgates opened that we are entitled to for the care and services that we provided to Frank Kurtz from his admission in 2013 all the way up to April 2017 before we started to receive that Medicaid payment.
Wouldn't that question have been easier posed to Medicaid and just say, okay, you know, you gave us a check for X amount, but we're due this Y. Are we only getting a certain amount?
So in terms of what was billed for $152,000 and the $42,000, we're not disputing that. That's the Medicaid payment that we will accept. We will not balance bill. That is our state obligation. It's that period from before March 2017 to December 1st, 2014, when the eligibility, when Medicaid said, you have $408,000 to pay, you, Kurt's family, have $408,000 to pay to the facility you are living. And that's on the first page of that document. We have to go out and get that money.
The Department of Health Care and Family Services. Lieberman has to go out and get that money? Okay.
So, and it makes sense. Medicaid doesn't have the resources or the availability to be chasing down people and getting receipts for every monthly payment they make to long-term care facilities. They expect this to be paid, and they're going to let the facilities go out and get it. And as...
Do you have any case law that you can cite to where this scenario happened?
Unfortunately not. Because I do think that would have helped us forestall and get through this case.
Is there anything in the regs that says this?
So there are regs. It's in the Administrative Code 89, Ill Admin Code, I believe it's 146, is the public aid code. And, or no, that's the supportive living code. It's 105, I believe. It's the, sorry. But it's in the Illinois Public Aid Code. And there are different sections, and we did cite to them in our brief as to talking a little bit about that. But in terms of addressing this particular situation where you have substantial spend down, a penalty that gets disputed, a penalty that just gets withdrawn, there's no reg that directly addresses that. Particularly in overtime.
I have a question.
Absolutely.
I'm back to the very beginning.
Yes.
Of this, because that's where, I mean, in my opinion, I'm having the most difficulty with this. When Mrs. Kurtz applied for Medicaid in December of 2014, mm-hmm. what is Lieberman's responsibility at that time? You said she does not have to, or they don't have to apply for the admit pack, and then later on they get this TAN number. What do you have to do once you're notified that she has applied for Medicaid in December 14, other than just sit on your hands until everything is resolved?
So at the point when you are going to be billing Medicaid, you do need to submit that admit
pack. No, I'm saying, what do you have to do, if anything, I'll step back a moment. When she applies in December 2014, is Lieberman notified that she's applied?
In this case, I was not involved. Typically, the facilities actually help with the application process.
Okay. Then, once the application is in December of 2014, what, if anything, at all is your, and I don't mean you, of course, is Lieberman's responsibility to get in line for possible payment if she's approved?
So you do have to, once you are made aware of the information, and so if the, depending on what you receive, you do go into the MEDI system.
And by you, Medicaid, you mean the Lieberman's? Okay.
Go into the MEDI system, enter in the data that, if it isn't in there already, that shows, because it is in the application where they're living, when they admitted, what the benefits are for. Because when you apply for Medicaid, you're allowed to apply retroactive 3 months. So, for example, as many of us have experienced, someone suddenly goes into a nursing home after a fall. They need rehab. It takes a while to get all the documents, to get the application. So the process allows you to retroactively apply for 3 months.
Right,
so
she applied in December.
Correct.
I know it would have gone back to September. My issue is still,
yeah,
once, you can't tell me first when you're notified.
It varies by case and by how forthcoming families are with information. If they receive everything themselves, if the facility is included in the service information.
Is there anything in the record that shows when Lieberman was notified initially after she applied in 2014?
No. And in fact, we talked to Mr. Haynes about this.
About whom?
Mr. Haynes, he was one of the DHS representatives that we deposed about spend down, penalty periods, notifications. And I specifically asked the question, how would Lieberman Center know when they could begin billing Medicaid for Mr. Kurtz's nursing home charges with the revised penalty? And his response was, answer line 13.
That's a different question. No,
there would be no notice.
That's a different, that has absolutely nothing to do with what I just asked. I'm talking about at the very beginning, when she applied for her husband in December of 2014, is there anything in the record that says you have the notification and so therefore you are supposed to start creating this admit pack so you can get in line for possible payment in the future?
No. There's no notice that tells you to do that.
It seems that you're telling me from December of 2014 until 2017, you got no notice?
Well, there was an admit pack that was filed, but over the course of appeals and
I know that. When was the admit pack filed?
That I don't have a date on. Okay. What we did is during these depositions, we had someone who was testifying by Zoom because it was during COVID, and he went in and he said, I see an admit pack here, but it's a data screen, and he said he saw one.
Is there a date on it?
He said he saw it?
Yes.
Is there a date on it?
And to be honest, though, I think the admit pack issue is a red herring.
We're not asking you what you think.
I understand.
Was there a date on the admit pack?
No, not that I have in my record.
Okay.
But when benefits became effective in April 2017, we billed those and we got paid for those. There is nothing in the record that says that even if I were to admit or agree that an admit pack was not timely filed, there is nothing in the record that says that that failure to submit the admit pack resulted in non-payment. We have no evidence, testimony, or document that says that failure to timely file caused non-payment. And I feel like that link is important.
I thought there was something, and maybe I'm wrong. I thought there was an email from after you applied that said you applied for this longer period, but because you put the admit pack in for that it was basically late, that you couldn't go, you could only go, I can't remember what the language is, but it put the issue that it was your mistake.
And I do recall an email, and I hope it is the same one we're thinking of, but that was by the Assistant Attorney General, who is representing the witnesses who would have been called to trial depending on the outcome of the motions in limine.
So.
Okay. I'm aware of that one where she said it looks like it should, but I would say the Assistant Attorney General doesn't work in Medicaid, doesn't work on the documents, and any representation by Assistant Attorney General Boulay.
I thought it was from somebody from DHS. We will check the record.
Yeah, of course.
So what is your position as to when Medicaid eligibility became relevant in this case? The liability phase or the damages phase?
damages phase.
Why not at the liability
phase? Well, at the liability phase, in that there's that period of time in which, from December 2014 to April 2017, that though the Medicaid application has been processed, has been deemed appropriate, you have to spend down your assets to become qualified for low-income status, at which point you're required to pay the facility. After that period expires, then Medicaid becomes effective. During that period of time, you're a private pay resident. Though we are waiting for the Medicaid benefits to take effect, you're paying the private pay rate. You're subject to the requirements, the billing, the invoices, as a private pay resident. And for that reason, the Medicaid issue, though it is part of the person's profile, it is not active. It is not relevant for the invoicing, the billing, and the collections, which is why we believe it's fair at that point to ask a jury to calculate the reasonable value of services where the appellant argued there is no basis in contract for the services you provided. We are entitled to some payment for 24/7 nursing services.
So at the damages phase, though, it appears that Lieberman filed a number of motions to try to keep Medicaid eligibility out.
Yes, we filed those motions in limine to remove the aspect of Medicaid because at that point, it's a simple calculation.
No, it's not.
If it's a simple calculation, then it would just be simple math, right? Like, why do you need a jury? You just do the math.
And I believe there could have been a decision on damages at the motion for summary judgment phase. The judge decided to hold that issue of damages to the jury, and we proceeded. But for the period of time for which the testimony was elicited, December 21st, 2014 to April 17, 2017, it is the private pay rate and what the reasonable value would be. From 2017 on, we accepted the Medicaid payment as full payment, and we didn't pursue the co-payment necessarily.
So we just left that
out of it, excluded that Medicaid payment from the calculation of the trial.
I don't mean to interrupt, but how does this eligibility or lack of eligibility in the damages phase clarify for the jury?
I don't think the jury needed to know anything about Medicaid for determining what is the value of
services. Isn't
that
part of the damages? You're trying to assess, we are owed X number of dollars. And if they bring in evidence about, well, yeah, but you were getting paid by Medicaid, then you have to put that into the equation. That's where at least the other side would argue.
Well, we...
Or you would argue.
But that's where the offset came in, where that was deducted from the... that we asked the jury was the reasonable value of services based on the evidence that was presented. Multiple rates were presented, including the Medicaid rate. The dates of service were presented as evidence, and specifically, our CFO testified that we were not pursuing dates from April 17 till the end, which is 400 and something odd dates. So we gave the jury the opportunity to determine what is the value of services for what we are requesting we are entitled to payment for. From there, after that verdict, we allowed the set-off, reduced the Medicaid, reduced the payments from other insurance. Mrs. Kurtz's payments were included in the jury verdict. They offset based on that. They were aware that she had made payments. And we do believe that removes the basis for any reason to add all of this Medicaid information in there that for which there was no evidence to support the claim that spend down had been met based on receipts, for the claim that this TAN had
the
PAC made a difference.
For the prior effect to determine whether or not there was? I mean, it seems like this was taken away from them and they're asked to make an assessment in terms of damages, yet at the same time, there might have been something else that could have been introduced to say, yes, but.
But at the close of discovery, there was nothing. And that's what the trial judge did. He reviewed everything. In the motion for summary judgment, all of this was presented. The appellant was able to present everything they had, everything they planned to offer in terms of Medicaid at the trial. And the trial judge correctly determined there is simply nothing admissible here. It is all, he had a statement in the motion for reconsideration that is all taken out of context. It is snippets. It is pieces of documentation with no foundation for which would not come in front of a jury anyway. And he was correct in that regard, in that proceeding to a trial and presenting information to a jury without foundation, without admissibility, all it would do was confuse the jury because so much of it wouldn't come in the first place.
Anybody else? Any questions?
I don't know.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you. Counsel?
Yes. Yes, let me first address the question to Judge Lumpkin. You, Justice, you raised the question. There is an email dated January 25, 2022 from Antonia Pasquini to Ellen Garcia, who is a billing clerk at Lieberman.
I'm sorry, at Lieberman, right?
Lieberman.
Yeah, at
Lieberman.
That's what I was
And it says, the eligibility for this customer begins on September 1, 2014, as the application date was December 30, 2014, with 3 months back date. While the customers did have eligibility, the admit for him was late. The 10 was submitted on March 13, with the admin requested date of April 3, 2014. So basically, it's continuing on, and then the email closes with the following. The only way around this, if there was an earlier 10 that was submitted, that was within the 45-day time frame. So the department made very clear that the admit, the 10 application, should have been filed within 45 days of the application. Okay, so that's the email that Your Honor recalled. Now, one of the fundamental misleading statements in this case is that the spend down can only be met by the Kurtz's paying Lieberman.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say we know that. Like, I didn't mean to dismiss, I'm just saying don't waste your time. We know that it could be other bills, other
receipts. Okay, fine, then I'll move on. Thank you. Then counsel for Lieberman also talked about the spend down, 440 something. This is all some fictitious documents.
Documents?
Some unreal fictitious documents.
Oh.
Those documents didn't come into play, and certainly my client did not pay $440, whatever the figure was, in order to meet the spend down requirement, and yet they got paid. So the best proof that the spend down was met was the fact that the Medicaid paid. And the only hang up to that was the penalty. And that penalty was removed by Judge Hall, by the court order. So all the impediments to payment by Medicare were gone. And the trial court was not made aware, and the motion for reconsideration was not made aware that all these issues were already resolved. And the court's basic premise, or the representation to the court, that Lieberman would never get paid and would face criminal sanctions, that was just a hyperbole. It was something that was not real. That was not told to the judge. And then we had pretrial conferences with the court in February and in March, and nothing is being told. I think the duty of candor to the tribunal would dictate that you
advise the court of a material fact.
I'm looking at just a little timesheet that I wrote, and that's why I asked counsel, when did they know?
Yes.
And the email has a date of January of 2022, but in July of 2022, they're still representing to the court that there's no pay down.
Correct.
That there is still a penalty.
Yes.
During the pretrial conferences, was your client still pro se?
Yes, and I came in March of 22, and I believe I was present at the first pretrial at the trial setting. By that time, the trial was set, and the court already ruled as to what the issue was going to be at the trial.
Okay.
So, in July 7, I believe, it's in the transcript, we were made aware that the payment of $44,000 was received, and then I raised the issue with the court that this obviously bears materially on the underlying facts in the case, and I thought that it would be unfair to go to trial with basically pretending that that didn't happen. And the court denied my request. And obviously, as you know, there were a whole series of motions in limine to bar any discussion of Medicaid, and certainly the court, right from the get-go, felt that this is not, that this case had nothing to do with Medicaid, even though Medicaid was front and center in this case. Yes. Yeah.
Any other questions?
I don't have any.
Oh, yes, one more. One of your judges, justices, asked when should have been filed?
I asked when should the which would have been a placeholder.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's right.
And there was nothing
until 2017.
No, that's when it was filed. Yes. But there was nothing preventing Lieberman from filing it sooner. And certainly if they had filed, we wouldn't be standing here because they would have gotten paid for all the relevant period. And that was the issue of the affirmative defenses. And certainly I ask that we be permitted to argue a mitigation of damages or avoidable consequences of the trial, and the court denied that. If I have any more questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to thank both counsels for a well-argued matter and a very interesting case. Court will take it under advisement.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.